it's really hard to know where to start. Like, you call a therapist office. Oh, sorry, you know, you can't get in till next year, or we don't have anyone taking new patients, and that's hard. And then someone calls a therapist office and they get in 6 months. Well, who knows where they're at in 6 months? You know, like maybe they're through their issue. Maybe they're worse. They don't know, you know? So that's really hard and discouraging.
Welcome to Not in a Huff with Jackson Huff, where we interview newsmakers, storytellers, and all-around interesting people. Sit back, relax, unless you're driving, and enjoy the show. Here's Jackson.
Hello. I am Jackson Huff. This is Not in a Huff. Thanks so much for joining me. As always, really appreciate it. This week, I'm speaking with Shani Andler. Now, Ms. Andler is somebody who works in the field of psychology. We've talked to people in that world before, but she focuses in on mental health when it comes to adolescents. She's developed an entire curriculum where she goes into schools and helps young kids cope with their issues. And I say young kids, but I think most of her work is in, you know, middle school and high school. She's developed a curriculum called Back Pocket. She's written a book about the tools to cope with issues, and then also she's written a follow-up book to help parents help their children cope as well. We cover some really eye-opening things this week when it comes to just the issues that our teens are facing right now. We talk about just the mental health aspect of just kind of living in a technology world, and where everyone's online, and there's bullying, and there's comparing yourself to others, and a lot of stuff there. We talk about kind of just something that I talked to someone about just a few weeks ago, and that's about how, you know, the stigma behind mental health is starting to be broken, but there's also the other side, the flip side of that, where there's people who kind of were going to seek psychiatric help as kind of a badge of honor. And let's clarify that and say, you know, obviously, counseling and that stuff is always a good thing, but you're going to hear from Shani about when sometimes things are taking a step too far, and that was really eye-opening to me, nothing that I'd ever heard of before. So we're going to talk about all of that. We're going to talk about her books. This is just a really fascinating conversation. I think you're going to enjoy it a lot. Before getting to that, go leave that 5-star review. Go leave a written review. That's those 5 stars can be on Apple and Spotify. The written is only on Apple right now. But go follow along on Instagram. All those places, I really, really appreciate it. Here is Shani Andler.
Sandler, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm going to kind of let you do the heavy lifting. Just introduce yourself.
Okay. I am Shani Andler from Madison, Wisconsin, and I'm the author and founder of a teen mental health program.
Among other things that we'll certainly unpack. So I kind of want to start with kind of the beginning of your story, because, you know, a lot of the things that you're doing, you just said teen mental health program, does kind of revolve around teens. So you got your start in the classroom. I think you were a teacher for 30 plus years. Tell us a little bit, I guess, kind of about that experience.
Yeah, so I guess I could start way back at the beginning. I was always that kid growing up that was like cheering, I guess you could say, for the underdogs. I always was the one sort of including people. I was very sort of drawn to special needs kids, always supporting them, you know, sort of bringing them in our groups. And so when it came time to go to college, I'm like, it's a shoo-in. I want to be a special ed teacher. So I went right into college knowing I wanted to be a special needs teacher. Did that for a long, long time. Stopped teaching when my kids were born. I have two boys, and I sort of did some subbing along those years. But that is where my true expertise, I guess you could say, in teen mental health came about, because I had a son who struggled greatly with anxiety. Alex, my son, in about seventh grade, developed this super big phobia of throwing up. And he couldn't go to school. He couldn't hang with friends. He couldn't eat. He couldn't sleep. He was just not in a normal state. And so we worked really closely with him. We lived along that with him, and he developed some coping skills. And so that is where my whole program evolved, I guess you could say, into. And I took my knowledge and turned it into this program.
I love that. And I love kind of your focus around, you know, coping skills. I feel like a lot of times with teens, you know, the worst thing to say, but the thing that a lot of people, you know, say is, oh, you have nothing to be worried about. You're young. You get your life ahead of you to worry about things, but that's not helping anybody to cope with the issues that you have is kind of what people need to focus on. So talk a little bit about, I guess, the importance of developing those coping skills for teens or for anyone really.
Yeah. So how this whole program came about was in about 2019, I had started a teen like mental health nonprofit, which used volunteering to address teen mental health. So I worked with a local high school here in Madison, and I manufactured or found volunteer opportunities where kids could, you know, go out and do some really value add activities with special needs kids, the homeless population, senior citizens, all kinds of stuff that you immediately felt good about yourself. COVID hit, unfortunately, and my whole nonprofit had to dissolve. No one needed volunteers, and you know, they don't want to go out themselves. But I had this teen mental health thing on my brain. And so one day I woke up and I said to my husband, oh my God, I'm going to write a book. All the things that Alex learned and all the things I've learned with my nonprofit, you know, this is what kids need. And so he was like, oh my God, here's one of your, you know, crazy ideas again. But I did it. I sat down, I wrote this book, and it took me 3 days, and I just sort of puked out all this information, these coping skills that Alex had learned, Alex has perfected, and all the things I do with kids now. And I wrote this book, and the book came to fruition and sort of took off in ways I didn't expect, where like I had children's hospitals and youth organizations and school districts reaching out and saying, hey, you know, we want to do something with this book. So I was like, let's make it better and let's start this program so kids can apply these tools. So the whole program and book are coping skills. And the reason I think that it's important is because I think every kid needs them. I think schools are trying to teach them, but I also think they're trying to teach a lot of other things in that realm. And I think it's the coping skills specifically that every single kid needs.
Yeah. Well, I always like to just relate all our conversations to every listener. So, I mean, we've got to take a quick little pause there to say, you know, we're focusing on teens just because that's kind of the area that you focused on. But I assume the coping skills that you've laid out can be used by people that are, you know, a little bit past that time.
Yes, for sure. I did just work with the UW women's hockey team. So I am sort of, you know, dabbling, I guess you could say, in the college age kids. But I do train a lot of teachers in this program, and a lot of them leave the program going, gosh, I find myself, you know, using these skills, or I went home and I use this, or I tried this. So I do think it's relatable to everyone. I just have a soft spot for the teens. So that's why I direct it toward the teens.
Yeah. Yeah. And you said that, you know, kind of some of this got going definitely with the book around the time of COVID, and it's kind of a good topic because I just talked to someone recently about mental health. And I recently told this story, but you know, my first interview that I ever had, interview number one, this is going to be interview number 250 something. So a long time ago, I talked to somebody at the height of COVID, and his whole thing, he was a former Tonight Show writer, but he suffered from suicidal thoughts and things like that. So that's what he went around talking about, you know, mental health in the world of comedy. And he was talking about at that point that during COVID, it was kind of the opposite of what most people would think was happening. And that was the people who had dealt with mental health challenges their entire life, they actually were doing a little bit better than the people who had never dealt with anything, because this was the first time that they had, you know, these people who had never dealt with anything had to be, you know, on their own. This is the first time that some of them had dealt with loneliness, the first time they had dealt with, you know, anxiety and fear for the unknown. And what the people that had dealt with mental health and had mental health, you know, professionals helping them in the past had that these people didn't have were coping skills, were things to understand how to get through these things. This is not the first time they felt this way, so they knew how to cope with it. So I feel like, you know, you starting this book about coping skills at that time is kind of perfect. So I just kind of wonder what you what you say about all that. That was kind of a lot to throw at you, but.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting take. You know, you always hear sort of the opposite that, oh gosh, it affected kids' mental health because they were a certain developmental age, but then emotionally they were this age, you know, all that. But I do agree. I think it was really good for a lot of kids, you know, especially the kids that maybe don't fit in at school, hate going to school for whatever reasons. Now they don't have to. And so, you know, it's sort of more allowed and accepted to stay home. So I do think it was really good for a lot of kids. Now, I don't know if that was good in the long run, but at the time, I do think it was good for them.
Yeah, well, I mean, that part's a whole nother topic, but at least it was good for people who knew already how to cope. And I think if your book was around us a little bit sooner, would have helped a lot of people that didn't already have those coping skills. So tell us just a little bit more about the book. Obviously, you wrote it in 3 days. So I don't assume that it's, you know, this 500 page book or you're like a complete rock star, but tell us a little bit about it.
No, I'll just show you the length. It's 87 yeah. pages because teens don't like to read. I mean, a lot of teens don't like to read. Let's just be honest. Yeah. At least mine didn't. That was the most embarrassing thing ever. But I wanted it to be something where if you presented it to a teen, they weren't like, yeah, right. You know, so I wanted it to be easy to read. I wanted it to be short. I wanted it to be really, really to the point. So the book is just that. It's 4 coping skills that are super accessible to anybody. You don't need appointments. You don't need finances. You don't need transportation. And there's nothing tried and true. They're all things that we all know how to do, but it's just organized in a way that I think kids can go, I like chapter 1, but I didn't like chapter 2. And chapter 3 really works for me. And so the chapters are, 1 is accessing happy hormones. So we talk about dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins, and literally list the ways you can access these. Playing with the dog, playing with the baby, you know, eating spicy foods. And there's probably 50 things on there that we can do. Chapter 2 is 4, I call them right now strategies. So it's breathing techniques, distraction, rationalizing, sort of playing like what's the worst that can happen game with the kids. And then helping others, because I think that is a strategy to help yourself that you can do right then. 3 is gratitude, practicing gratitude and positivity. And I look at it in a little bit different way. I think kids are like, they hear that word a lot, like be grateful. And I think they know what that means, but I try to look at it like for the little things, like, are you having a good hair day today? Or did you have an ice cream cone last night that you liked? You know, like little things, because everyone has little things. And then 4 is every adult's favorite, but the kids don't love it, putting down the phone. I had to put something about the phone in there because I think that's a huge contributor to the mental health. Yeah. But I don't want to come at them like, don't be on the phone, don't be on your phone. You know, I don't think that's good for them either.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's just touch on that particular chapter for a second. What angle are you coming with that from? Is it that, you know, comparing yourself to everybody else's best pictures is going to create anxiety? Like what creates the issues with around, you know, people's reliance on their phones?
Well, I think it's really important to look at 2 things. And I have just sort of been, my eyes have been open recently about, I read a book on phones from a kid's perspective. And it's really interesting to hear that perspective because they have, you know, issues with friends if they don't get back to them in a speedy amount of time, or if they are kids that don't have a lot of friends at school and that's their social network. And if they can't be on their phone, they don't talk to anyone, you know, so there are some situations. So I really want to address that and be sensitive to that with kids. But I do know that, and I give the statistic to kids, kids are on their phones an average of 7 hours and 22 minutes a day. And that adds up to 111 days a year and 28 years of your life. So, and personally, I think that number is higher, especially in the summer months. But, you know, I really want them to just, especially the older kids, just be aware of that and maybe try some little things. You know, maybe try 1 day a week of putting it away for a half hour. Just something as they get older to just be aware of it and know that there's a real direct correlation between phone time or screen time, I guess, and your mental health.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. So, you know, we just talked about the chapter that maybe the kids don't like as well. That's kind of a good lead in to, you know, you've been doing this program, you've been presenting it to people for a while now. So what's the reception? Have the kids been receptive to this? Is it kind of an uphill battle? And once they crack open the book, that it's something that people find that it's beneficial to them, or what have you found there?
I find that kids really, really want this information and they're seeking it. So in order to just sort of perfect my product, I've been teaching it for the last 2 years. I will go in classrooms or to groups of kids and teach it myself because I want to see it in person and see how I can tweak it and make it better. And I find that, you know, you have 6th through 12th graders, you have groups of sports teams, you have, I'm also a teacher at a adolescent psychiatric hospital. So I have groups of kids in the hospital, and every single group is locked into this information. And I think the reason is because it's so straightforward and it's so easy to grasp for these kids that they're like, I need this stuff and I don't know where else to go for it. I can go to the internet or the school or you know, my parents and stuff, but it's so sort of nebulous and they get all this different stuff from all over that I think they're like, give me something tangible. Give me something I can do to help myself. So the reception has been amazing. The hardest part about the whole thing is just getting into a school, you know, to sort of have them believe in it and see the evidence and sort of have them vet it has been a really long process. But because of the resonation of kids, I'm going to keep at it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So do you find schools just say they don't necessarily have the time, or they just don't see the necessity, or where's the pain point there?
If I were to look at one thing, it's budget. You know, they just don't have available funds at that time. They always have to sort of review the budget year to year. But in schools, there's sort of a new subject, I guess you could say, called SEL, which is social emotional learning. And a lot of schools are adding this to their day-to-day content because so many kids need it. You know, they have math, they have science, they have reading and writing, and they have SEL. And a lot of these programs are very, very, very involved. So they have 60 lessons for kids, and they try to teach every single personality trait that everyone needs, from leadership to compassion to resiliency to executive functioning to bullying to, you know, all the stuff, which I always call it, we're trying to build the perfect human. And I don't think that's effective. I think by lesson 55, I think kids are like, oh my God, this is awful. So I think this one targets this coping skills and says, you know what, let's give them what they need. Let's give them what they're going to really grasp and equip them with these, because I don't know if every kid needs all those other skills. So that's just my take on.
I feel like you're being generous. By lesson 55, I think they've completely checked out. So I want to know kind of, and this is a question that you presented to me ahead of time. So, I mean, where do you feel like mental health is today with adolescents? Where do we stand currently?
You know, the whole reason I started this program was because I don't think kids have coping skills. And a lot of people have asked me, what do you think it is? Why do you think there's so much teen mental health issues? And I have thought and educated myself on this. And I have come to the conclusion that I really think kids do cope with their phones. I think that's how they cope. They have a rough day. They have a bad situation. They stick their head in their phone. I think that makes their problems and their issues worse. I think it exacerbates it with, you know, they go down a rabbit hole and they see something they don't like, or they get a text they don't like. So then what happens is, because they're not learning to cope with healthy things, that maybe even like calling a friend and processing a situation or riding their bike outside or doing something healthy, when they are faced with something in life that they need to cope with, they don't know how, and they spiral. And so we see kids come to the hospital that, I mean, they get B's on their report card and they attempt suicide. The one that sticks out the most to me, we had a girl come in, she couldn't find a prom dress in her size and she took a bottle of pills, you know? So like, no, that's a little dramatic, I know, but it's crazy things that make kids spiral.
Yeah, for sure. And I want to kind of ask you, because every time I talk to anyone in the mental health world, whether it's a psychologist or anyone else, you know, I always like to kind of ask about the stigma around mental health. And I'm especially interested in hearing your take on it, because, you know, most of the time I talk to psychologists that are dealing with, you know, adults, whether it's people kind of at the end of their careers or somewhere there, you know, dealing with that midlife crisis or a lot of other things. We talk about there's been a stigma around mental health for a long time where mental health is not seen as just regular health. You know, if somebody has a heart problem, we don't stigma, you know, we don't create a stigma around that. But when somebody says they have a mental health problem, people are like, oh, that's weird, which is something that I think is going away a little bit. So the reason that I'm interested in your thoughts, because almost all of them say it's slowly changing. It's kind of built into the fabric of the older generations, but the younger generations aren't building those same stigmas. So now that, you know, that's kind of primarily what you deal with, that younger generation. Are you seeing still a stigma around it or not as much?
I think you're seeing a little bit of both. I do think you are seeing a stigma in some ways. I do think you all of a sudden think, oh my gosh, what's wrong with them? You know, they were out for a week because of mental health. But I also think you're seeing something new in the sense that a lot of kids like their mental health issues and they sort of thrive in them and they don't want to get rid of them. They don't want to get better because that's their identity. And I think that's a dangerous thing because they don't know who they are without, you know, their friends helping them every second. And oh my gosh, she's having another issue. We have to go over there. And I just see this attention that kids are getting from big time issues, and they go farther and farther with their issues, I guess you could say. And that's scary to me. I ask a lot of kids all the time, like, if I could snap my fingers and take away your mental health, would you want me to? And every one of them says no. And so I say, why not? And they say, because that's who I am. It's making me who I am. But then again, I also feel like some of them I talk to, and that's all we talk about is their mental health and how are you feeling and how are you doing? And I was like, can we just talk about normal teenage stuff for a while? You know, let's talk about something else. What do you like to do? Tell me about, did you eat something good this week? You know, something other than where you're at and how hard your week was. And so I don't know if the stigma is getting better or worse or different.
Yeah. And that's what I recently talked to somebody about, where, you know, there is the opposite going on now where people are, I guess, a little bit, I don't want to say it's cool, but it's definitely an interesting world that things have happened there. So I just wonder, I mean, how do you see that? Do you see that as, you know, that's truly what people have made their identities as, is like you said, or is it more like, you know, that's just another facet of somebody's mental health challenges that they struggle and desire that attention that it gives them?
Yes, I think you're totally spot on with that. Like, if a kid is getting attention that way and likes that, that's a problem in of itself. You know, they're obviously needing attention for some reason, but, you know, how far will they go to get that attention? We have a lot of kids being discharged from the hospital that want a new fresh bracelet, fresh hospital bracelet, so they can wear it to school the next day and, you know, show all their kids, look where I was last night. I was at the psychiatric hospital, you know, so it is sort of a badge of honor. And so, like, you do have to feel bad for those kids because that's the only way they can sort of stand out and get the attention they're seeking.
I'm rarely left speechless, but I don't even know how to respond to that. That's very, very, I mean, that's just alarming. I feel like that's almost the opposite now than the question that I asked you as far as, is there a stigma around it? I feel like it's, I don't know. I don't even know how to respond to that. I guess my question to you is, what is that like, you know, as somebody that's in the profession, in the mental health profession, to now almost have people wearing it as a badge of honor now? And I want to kind of be careful with that, because dealing with mental health issues absolutely should be seen in a positive light. It's not like people should hide it, but at the same time, I feel like there's an issue there if somebody is wanting just to flaunt that they went through a challenge. I don't know. That's just a slippery slope. You want people to deal with it, but you also don't want people to just simply want to go so they have something to wear the next day to school. So I don't, that's strange.
Yeah. Now, again, I want to sort of follow this up with, these are the kids I work with every day. So this is not the norm. You know, this isn't every kid at a middle or a high school. These are the kids I see every day. So it's the, right, the very end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. But I do think, you know, if let's just say I had the power to help every one of these kids and I had my own business, I guess, and I was going to help these kids that are getting the attention for mental health, I would try to find something with them that they could shine with to give them that attention. So whether it's, you know, some kind of talent they have, something that just lights their fire. And that's what I try to do with the kids at the hospital. Like, I will talk to them. I talked to a kid the other day, honestly, for 20 minutes, because he worked at McDonald's, about the Grandma's McFlurry that was out this summer. But he was so animated about it and so into it. And I'm like, okay, you know, like, that's your thing you're into. Hey, that's something, you know? So I really want to find something with these kids that lights them up besides mental health, some way they can get attention. So that would be my sort of like dream and my passion. If I had my own like mental health clinic, I would focus on passions for kids.
I think that's awesome for sure. And, you know, we touched on a really, I guess, a topic that doesn't have great answers. So here's a pretty softball answer. And let's talk about just the importance of understanding and dealing with mental health. I assume that's a really important topic. That's kind of what that's the whole reason we're here. So talk about the importance of, you know, dealing with it.
Well, I mean, it's like you said before, I think it should be just as important as physical health. Mm. But I also think it doesn't have to be as scary and, you know, dark as we think it is. So a lot of times with my program, when I am done teaching it, I say to the kids, what did you think when your teacher came to you and said, hey, we're going to do this mental health workshop in school? Or what did you think when your coach came to you? What did you think this was going to look like? And they all say, oh gosh, we thought we were going to sit in a circle and, like, you know, talk about our problems and talk about deep, dark things. And I sort of make it fun in a way. Like, I, you know, it's really engaging and we're vulnerable a little bit, but we take it in a light way, because, you know, not everyone that's out of shape needs heart surgery, you know, like we don't have to go to that extreme. So everyone that has like mental health issues, anxiety, even depression, is not suicidal or, like, you know, going to have to be in a psychiatric hospital. So we can just sort of lighten it up a little bit. And what was the word I heard the other, like, democratization of it, like just sort of like chill out on it a little bit. And that's sort of a message I would love to get to kids. Like, you're having this stuff, super normal. You'll get through it. You know, like, there's things you can do to help yourself, things you can learn to get better, but you'll get through it. It's very normal.
Yeah. And I mean, again, to kind of relate it to the average listener, you know, I think there's plenty of people listening that do have kids that this is a really powerful thing. But I wonder, how do you think using the coping mechanisms that you've laid out, how would we fit it into, you know, the adult world? How would we fit it into, you know, the people who, you know, the parents of these kids? Yeah, now they've got the kids this book, and the kids are doing a great job, but now maybe mom doesn't even know how to cope with things. So how can people use your tools to help themselves as well?
Well, you want to know something great, Jackson?
Sure.
My second book just came out.
Almost like I knew that, huh?
Back Pocket for Parents just came out last week. So it is the same skills, the same, you know, super tried and true skills for parents. So it is a book I wished I had when Alex was struggling, because we were like, oh my God, what do we do? Do we yell at him? Do we add humor to this? Do we ignore it? Like, I don't know how to deal with this. And we were learning along with him. And then he got on that hamster wheel and couldn't get off. Like, we could not get him off that. So if parents, like, can sort of equip themselves with tools like I'm ready to, you know, if my kid comes home and they're struggling a little bit, they're withdrawing, I'm noticing some things, they're not wanting to go to school, I know how to help them and sort of be proactive. That's my big dream for this whole program. I wish this could be taught like in sixth, seventh grade, so kids can learn it proactively. And so let's practice these skills in sixth grade. Let's practice them in seventh, eighth, ninth, 10th, 11th, 12th. And then maybe, just maybe, they have them so perfective that they can pull them out at any time. And same with parents. If they sort of work on them and teach themselves and learn them, then maybe they can help their kids if they need them.
Yeah, I did know about that book, but my question about it was, is it, you know, creating tools in order to help your kids, or is it creating tools that can also help you? That's what I wasn't sure about.
It's a little bit of both. It's a little bit of both. So it's talking about the phones, and it's talking about how to help your kids with it. But then it's also saying, you got to do it too. You know, if you're making your kids put down the phone at 10 at night, then you do it too. So it's sort of a little bit of both, you know, like, here's some ways to distract yourself. Because, and I talk a lot about Alex, when we went through it, it was awful. It was an awful time. I hear ya. You know, this is what we did to sort of help ourselves get through it. So it is really messages to parents, messages of hope. You know, someone called it a nugget of salvation the other day. So like, it's just messages of hope and like, here's some ways to get yourself on the right path.
How does Alex feel about all this? I assume that you share his story. So I assume that you've got his blessing about all that, but he kind of created a whole movement with you. You've taken it at least around Wisconsin, but hopefully nationwide because of an issue that he struggled with. That has to be kind of powerful, rewarding for him. If it isn't yet, he'll soon figure it out.
Yeah. You know, I felt weird about it at first because I was sharing so much. And so I constantly say to him, Alex, if you ever, you know, don't like this or you feel uncomfortable, I will stop. Like, I don't want to expose and just be in people's face using something you don't feel comfortable with. But he's like, absolutely not. If I can help anyone through this, I would. Alex went to college at Iowa, University of Iowa, and got a business degree, which he's not going to be using now, which that's a whole nother story. He wants to be a teacher. So he called me the other day and I said, I want to be a third grade teacher. So who knows, you know, how that came about, but he's just one of these people that loves to help other people. Who knows, maybe it was because of his own struggles, but he's all for it.
I love that for sure. I do a great job of talking all about these books and then a terrible job of actually saying what the books are called. Tell us again what your two books are called and how people can pick them up.
First one is Back Pocket, Tools for Teens to Nurture Their Mental Health. And then the second one is Back Pocket for Parents. So you can sort of remember Back Pocket and Back Pocket for Parents. And they're both on Amazon.
Both on Amazon. Yeah. So, you know, when anytime I talk to people who have, you know, really powerful things to talk about, it's not just an easy progression through somebody's life. I'm not the perfect interviewer. So I always like to ask, is there anything that we haven't covered that you really want to make sure that people hear?
You know, depending on the audience, but if there's someone out there that's struggling, try not to get discouraged. I know that's very much easier said than done, but I know it's really hard to know where to start. Like, you call a therapist office. Oh, sorry, you know, you can't get in till next year, or we don't have anyone taking new patients. And that's hard. And then let's just go that route. Someone calls a therapist office and they get in 6 months. Well, who knows where they're at in 6 months? You know, like maybe they're through their issue. Maybe they're worse. They don't know, you know, so that's really hard and discouraging. So I think just knowing that you're not alone, I think is a really good message to send to people. Like that's the way life is. In my workshop, I have kids take their phones. I know that's sort of contradictory to what I'm trying to teach, but I had them take their phones and go in a hallway all alone, like independently, and video record themselves for about a minute. And I say all your problems into your phone. You're not going to have to share it. You're not going to have to tell anyone, but just say everything you're worried about, everything going on, and don't hold back because no one's going to see this. And then watch that video next week, next month, and maybe even next year. And you probably will laugh at some of those things or be like, oh my God, I was worried about that. But I also want to say there will be something new. There'll be something new you're anxious about or depressed about or upset about. But that's the way it goes. You know, that's how life goes like that. So if you can just sort of visually see that and see that in real time, I don't know, I think it's sort of a powerful thing.
No, I think so for sure. So people can pick up both of those books on Amazon. I really, really appreciate your time.
Yes, thank you.
So that was Shani Andler. Definitely some eye-opening stuff there, things that I had never even considered in the world of mental health and just the things that our teens are navigating these days. Hope you enjoyed that conversation. Hopefully you learned a lot. And if it benefits you or the young people in your life to pick up her books, urge you to do that. She's got the one for teens to help them cope, and then she's got the one for parents to help the kids get through things as well. So both of those things are really, really powerful. Check out backpockettools.com, her whole kind of curriculum about around it. I know that she's trying to grow that within schools and help kind of curb the mental health issues before they even begin, if people learn how to cope in some of that that curriculum. So urge you to check out her books, check out that website. All the links to that will be in the show notes. If this is your first time listening and you haven't already, leave that 5-star review on Apple and on Spotify. Leave a written review on Apple. Helps a lot. Not Enough Podcast on Instagram. Not Enough Podcast now on TikTok. But a lot of places to follow along. Over 200 guests in the past. So check those out, those that interest you. Follow along so you don't miss out on future guests either. But I really, really appreciate it. Take it away, Chris.
This has been Not in a Huff with Jackson Huff. Thank you for listening. Be sure to join us next time where we will interview another amazing guest who is sure to make you laugh or make you think, or hey, maybe even both. But until then, keep being awesome.